In your face. And of course, the coalition this week lobbed a grenade into the parliament, which really showed the need for an LGBTIQA plus commissioner, with their bizarrely entitled Restoring Common Sense and Recognising Biological Sex Bill, which was defeated in the Senate, introduced by Michaelia Cash. What are your thoughts on that debacle?
Well, it seems to me that there's, right up to the next election, there'll probably be a battle between the Coalition and One Nation over who can be most transphobic, which is very disappointing and will cause deep damage. I would hope that that wouldn't be the case, but unfortunately it looks like it will happen, and this was what the Coalition's first shot in that battle, or one of the first shots. I've been working with a number of mainstream women's services, both in Tasmania and nationally, to highlight how damaging these kinds of amendments would be, not only for trans and for trans women, but also for women generally. If the kind of definition of sex, biologically based definition that the Coalition wants, was actually put into law, that would mean a whole range of women would be potentially disadvantaged. Women who don't conform to the traditional gender stereotypes may find themselves discriminated against. Women who, want to access support or services may have to present or pass particular, tests of present evidence that they're women, biologically based women, women-born women. They may have to go through invasive tests, and I mean, there's so many areas where women across the board could be disadvantaged by these kinds of really reductionist definitions. I really thought that our society had moved beyond this. In the past, women were judged according to their biology. Women were denied the vote because it was said that they were somehow biologically ineligible for that, or they were forced into the home and into childbearing because of some kind of biological determinism. Biological determinism has been used against women again and again in Australia and across the world, and it will be again if we have these archaic, retrograde, exclusive, discriminatory, segregationist definitions put into our law. We have to do everything we can to fight this, because it's not just a problem for trans women, as much as it is a problem for them, it's a problem for all women and everyone who believes in equal rights and dignity.
Do you think One Nation will turn around and have a go and introduce a bill that's even worse? Is that what you think this is about?
Yeah.
Kind of a race to the bottom, right?
Yep. I mean, they've already done that. One Nation has been trying for a couple of years now to get these kinds of amendments to the Sex Discrimination Act. And I've got no doubt that they will try something even more repressive and exclusionary in order to try and outbid the Coalition in search of the transphobe vote. I don't think that those votes are actually out there. I think this is very much a Parliament House bubble. I don't think most Australians are going to vote according to their views on, or the parliamentary views on, trans rights. But for some reason, One Nation and the Coalition have convinced themselves that this is an important issue. They don't want to look like they're falling behind reform in the UK or MAGA in the US. And so they've decided to, as you said, race to the bottom.
Is that really as well what's going on? I mean, the Coalition and One Nation, Pauline Hanson, they have spent a lot of time going to conservative conferences in the UK, in the US, CPAC, Pauline was at Mar-a-Lago with Gina, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that they're really putting a lot of resources and getting a lot of resources from overseas interests? We've heard that with bot farms pushing, propaganda and stuff like that. It really sounds like they're talking to overseas interests rather than ordinary Australians, which is ironic because that's not their narrative.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What's happening here is that strategists from the US and the UK are telling One Nation, possibly the Coalition, Gina Reinhart or whoever else is involved in this, that attacking trans people is the thing to do because they're a tiny minority who can be demonised easily, that's a really useful distraction from the economic issues that are really worrying Australians. So if you get people to focus on this other culture war issue, then you're distracting them from the things that, you know, are important to them day to day. And you build up this kind of culture war, this moral panic about trans people, as has happened in the US and the UK. And then you step in as the person who's going to fix that moral panic or culture war, the person who's going to win it with your legislation or whatever it might be. It's a classic far right wing moral panic strategy. We've seen it again and again. We saw it on marriage equality in the mid 2000s in Australia and the US. People might remember that George W. Bush wanted to get re-elected in 2004, and there was this huge moral panic about how marriage equality, which had then been passed in several US states, would destroy the world, and that there needed to be a constitutional amendment against it. And off they went. And, of course, in Australia, the same course was taken by John Howard in banning same-sex marriage. There was a culture war or a moral panic stirred up about marriage equality, and then he stepped in as the person who would fix the problem. It's exactly the same dynamic. We've seen it again and again. The reason I cite marriage equality, of course, is because we know that we moved on from that moral panic to actually achieve marriage equality 13 years later. And I'm confident that Australians will also move on from this anti-trans panic. They realise that it's nonsense, and that we'll see a greater embrace of trans and gender diverse people in Australia in the coming years. It may not be in the next year or two. This may be a very difficult time for all of us, but it will happen. There will be a time when our country embraces trans people.
Do you think the more that Australians get reacquainted with Pauline Hanson, the less they like her? You know, we've already seen her polling going down as a consequence of her monoculture rant.
I'm not sure. I don't want to make predictions about what will happen in the lead up to the election. Anything could happen. The sense I get is that, everyday voters are a bit concerned that, you know, if they're being told that they're being manipulated by these false social media accounts from Southeast Asia or Russia or wherever it is. That may make people a bit more sceptical, which is good. No one likes to feel they're being manipulated. And as for talk of monoculture, yeah, I do find amongst the people I speak to that that's something that they scratch their head about and maybe make jokes about. And here I'm not talking about, you know, my friends who may not be particularly keen on One Nation. I'm talking about people who are potential swing voters. Pauline Hanson doesn't seem to be doing herself any favours with some of the stuff that she comes out with. I probably live in the most Anglo state of Australia, Tasmania, but even here, people are really scratching their heads about whether what a monoculture would be, and how old-fashioned that seems, and how out of step with the fact that there are so many people in our communities who are from different cultures.
Is it out of the ballpark, do you think, that we could have a situation where you have a minority coalition government with supply and confidence from One Nation? Is that an equation that's off the rails heading towards the next election, for the next election?
Oh, it's definitely a possibility. Obviously a frightening one for LGBTIQA plus people and anyone who's a bit different, I guess. But One Nation has shown itself in the past not to be very effective at exercising power and to pull itself apart, to fall apart when faced with the realities of day-to-day government. I'm not sure that a situation that you've just described would necessarily last very long. It sounds pretty unstable.
You mentioned before how this culture war has been going on for basically, you know, over 25 years, you know, three decades, if you like. Are you surprised they keep coming back to the well to try and have another drink?
Well, I've been facing culture war or moral panics on LGBTIQA plus issues since I came out, really. I was involved in the battle to decriminalise homosexuality in Tasmania, and that was beaten up as a huge culture war by then Liberal Party leaders like Robin Gray. And then, of course, there was marriage equality, and now there's a trans exclusion, as well as the religious freedom issue that's disappeared for a moment in Australia, but I'm sure we'll be back sometime soon. So it's disappointing that people keep trying to beat up these culture wars. I'm reassured that when I look at the polling on how Australians actually feel about marriage equality or about their, you know, their trans people, that there isn't a deep well of prejudice there. There may be some confusion, there may be some misunderstanding, but it's not anything that can't be addressed with, reaching out to people, giving them good information, and particularly people who are concerned, telling their stories about the way the prejudice affects them. Just last year, I saw some polling on, you know, whether trans people should have the same rights as other Australians, whether people felt that trans people posed a threat to them, and the results were very reassuring. Australians are very strongly in support of trans equality and inclusion, and do not see trans people as a threat. If One Nation or whomever it is wants to stir up prejudice in Australia, they've got a far bigger battle ahead of them than equivalent people in the UK or the US.
We were talking before about the LGBTIQA+ commissioner bill that the Greens have introduced. If Labor, is still wishy-washy on that, but they're thinking about something else that needs to be implemented as a priority that's kind of, easy, that's in line with Labor philosophy, is there any other reform that they also should make?
Well, they're certainly talking about Labor philosophy. There's reforms for the Fair Work Act that are important and overdue in terms of protecting LGBTIQA+ people as effectively as possible. Labor did make some reforms at the beginning of its first term, the first term of the Albanese government, which were welcome. They need to be followed up with some further reforms and certainly fit within Labor's remit of defending workers. And speaking of workers, of course, there's the issue I mentioned before of protecting LGBTIQA+ people in faith-based schools and services. That doesn't only mean students, well, as important as that is, in schools or customers and clients of religious services. It also means the staff in those schools and services. And that's very much within Labor's remit of defending workers again. And it baffles me why Labor doesn't want to approach that reform. Tasmania has protected LGBTIQA+ people in religious schools and services since 1998, protected them from discrimination, I should say. And more recently, Victoria, the ACT, and Queensland to an extent have done the same. And they were all Labor governments that did that. I do not understand why Labor federally can't follow the lead of Labor at a state level and amend the Sex Discrimination Act.
And just quickly, Rodney, you mentioned some further Fair Work reforms. Can you just go into a little bit more detail so that we know specifically what they should do?
Well, one aspect is protecting people with innate variations of sex characteristics. There is some protection in the Fair Work Act, but that definition is quite narrow and it needs to be reformed to ensure that all people with innate variations have the same protections as other workers. So that's one reform that I think is quite urgent there.
Fantastic. Rodney Croom from Just Equal. Always great to hear your voice on 3CR. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No worries. Thanks, James. 3CR.
Jebediah there with Ever Ready. You are on In Your Face here on Smith Street, here on 3CR with James. Well, 2 weeks ago, the Victorian Parliament held inquiries, hearings, in fact, into LGBTIQA+ hate crimes. And I spoke with Sean Mulcahy from the Victorian Pride Lobby about the inquiry and about the hearings.
So we've had 2 days of hearings for the inquiry this week, and some of the main issues that we brought forward to the committee was the need for this level of violence that our community is experiencing to be responded to institutionally and legally. So we had three key recommendations that we put to the committee. First, despite the fact that this is an inquiry into anti-LGBTIQ plus hate crimes, Victoria doesn't actually have any standalone hate crime offences. So we need to address this by introducing what we call aggravated or hate-based offences into the Crimes Act. But in order for those offences to be prosecuted, policing needs to be strengthened, and we've suggested establishing a hate crimes unit within Victoria Police alongside an independent hate crimes scrutiny panel, which provides some oversight of the investigation and responses to hate crimes, a similar model as to what they are developing in Queensland. And lastly, we need to address some of the legislative gaps. So the Sentencing Act, which does include aggravated sentencing provisions, which means that if you have committed an offence and you are motivated by hatred based on a person's protected attributes, including their LGBTIQ plus status, your sentence could be uplifted. But we need to make that clearer so that the courts can consider prejudice motivation wherever hostility is demonstrated on the basis of somebody's protected attributes, including their LGBTIQ plus status, their disability, their sex and the like. So really what our key message was is that the law in Victoria needs to denounce hate but still respect free speech.
Sounds like there is an enormous amount that needs to be done. At the hearings, were there some common themes about how, I guess, hate crimes are directed at the LGBTIQA plus community? Like, were there some common themes?
We heard a lot about the rise in hate crimes directed against gay and bisexual men, particularly app-connected violence, so people that are connecting through Grindr and then being the subject of sometimes quite vicious bashings. There's been 95 reported attacks against gay and bi men in Victoria and 42 offenders arrested. But we do know that this violence affects others in our community. Our research at the Pride Lobby shows that 1 in 10 trans people have experienced violence and anti-trans violence, and 6% of lesbian and bisexual women report having been bashed. Now, I talked a bit about what we can do to respond when the incidents happen, but we know that enforcement alone isn't enough. And a common message through the hearings from many people that were speaking is that we also need to prioritise prevention. And one key thing we can do in Victoria, we can't regulate online apps like Grindr. We rely on the federal government to do that. But one key thing we can do in Victoria is introduce what we call a positive duty in our state's equal opportunity laws. And that positive duty will mean that organisations have to take reasonable and proportionate steps to eliminate vilification before it escalates into violence. So we're not just waiting for vilification to occur and from that violence to be enacted. We're saying organisations need to do things like put in place policies, put in place filters, put in place training for staff to ensure that we don't see this hate speech, which so often leads to hate crimes and criminal offending against our community.
So the inquiry is being conducted by the upper house, by the Legislative Council. You've got a diversity of upper house MPs from, you know, a multitude of political persuasions. Were the politicians that you were talking to at the inquiry, at the hearings, were they on board? Did they present a united front? Like, what was the mood like amongst the politicians who will ultimately be making the recommendations that the Parliament will hopefully act on?
So you're right, James. This is an inquiry by the Legislative Council or the Upper House's Committee into Legal and Social Issues. It's a multi-partisan committee where we're speaking to representatives from the Labor government to the Liberal opposition and to members of the Greens as well too. And there are other members of other political parties participating in this committee as well too, albeit that they weren't there for the 2 days of the hearings, which can sometimes happen. People have other commitments and the like, and that's totally fine. I think we got a very good hearing. I think the committee members were largely sympathetic to the concerns that people were raising. My hope is that we can get some strong bipartisan recommendations out of this. Hate isn't an issue that should be politicised or divided along political lines. We've seen previously when the Legislative Assembly, that is the Lower Houses Committee, did their inquiry into anti-vilification or hate speech protections. That was a bipartisan report. The recommendations were supported by both the Labor government and the Liberal National Opposition, and that meant we could get those hate crime laws through the parliament. I would hope that we see the same level of bipartisanship on this issue as well too.
So it sounds like you didn't see any political warning bells, that, you know, there weren't any questionings that made you go, this person's not on board. This is going to be used as a political football as we gear up for the election. It sounds like there was none of that shenanigans.
Look, I think it's fair to say that there was a concern around how we balance free speech with freedom from hate. And I think the key point that many of the submitters made during their evidence to the inquiry was, when we talk about hate crimes, it's not just about hate, it's about the criminal element as well too. So this is a crime, whether it is robbery or assault or affray, that is coupled with a prejudice motivation. So this isn't about policing somebody for disagreement. This is about policing somebody that has already committed a criminal offence, something that we've already prescribed in the Crimes Act as a crime, but they are doing that motivated by prejudice against somebody based on their sexual orientation, on their gender identity and their sex characteristics. So I hope that message was heard loud and clearly by perhaps some committee members that were rightly concerned about impingements on free speech, that this is actually dealing with criminal behaviour that is motivated by prejudice. It's not about disagreements or debates around issues related to LGBTIQA plus communities.
Who raised concerns about free speech?
I think it would be fair to say to anybody that goes back and watches, there was one particular member, Anne-Marie Hermans, who's the Liberal member for Southeastern Metropolitan, who did raise some curly questions, I think at one time asking the percentage of the transgender community who are pagans. I don't know quite how we got there, but it was certainly amusing when she did. But I think there was a really strongly put evidence to really clearly articulate that, yes, there are crimes within the community generally, and our communities unfortunately experience these prejudice-motivated crimes based on simple things about who we love, who we are, and how our bodies look.
How on earth did she get into a rhythm where she was talking about trans people and paganism? Like, that's off the rails.
I do not know. You would have to ask Mrs. Hermans herself, but I will say I thought it was a rather amusing question.
And what was the reaction from the other politicians?
Look, I think the politicians across the committee were incredibly respectful. And I do have to particularly call out the committee's chair, Jo McCracken, who's also a member of the LGBTIQA plus community. He handled the evidence extremely sensitively. We had a number of people speak about their own lived experience of hate crimes and assaults, and it was really tough listening, and I really want to compliment the chair on the care in which he showed everyone who gave evidence towards that inquiry and the sensitivity that he showed towards the witnesses.
Has there been a reaction from Jess Wilson, the opposition leader here in Victoria, to the inquiry?
Not as yet. I'll be honest with your listeners. When the motion to establish the inquiry was put to the Upper House, it was supported by The Labor Party, it was introduced by the Greens and supported by members of the crossbench. Unfortunately, the Liberal and National parties didn't support the inquiry at that time. Their argument was that there are other communities that are also affected by prejudice-motivated violence, including ethnic and religious communities. But I think we've managed to make the point really clear that there are particular issues impacting our communities. I know particularly the gay and bisexual men who've been targeted in these Grindr-related or app-related attacks that warrant an inquiry. I think we made that point quite solid and quite clearly during the 2 days of hearings. And I think that was felt by even some members of the committee or the parliament that had perhaps questioned the need for this inquiry. You know, some people
there could
didn't
be a point
really
of
know
difference,
the extent
there during the election campaign. I mean, the two parties may have opposing policies in this regard, and potentially the Liberals could not support the recommendations as part of their policy during the build up to the election.
I really hope that we do see bipartisan support on this issue. This, as I stressed before, this isn't an issue about speech. This is an issue about crimes and particularly often quite graphic crimes that are targeted towards people based on their protected characteristics. Now, I would think, given that the Liberal and National parties have raised the issue of crime in Victoria, that they will be looking at everything that they can do to stop it happening. And what that is going to require to put an end to the anti-LGBTIQA+ hate crimes we're seeing in Victoria is targeted strategies and actions to address the particularities of the crimes that our community are facing.
And that's a bit of a bind for them, isn't it? That's a bit of a wedge for the coalition in Victoria. On the one hand, they're saying the government needs to be tougher on crime, but on the other hand, they're kind of, you know, wishy-washy on LGBTIQ hate crimes. They can't have it both ways.
Well, I think if you're going to stop crime in Victoria, well, which is something that we should understandably aspire to, then you need to stop crime in all of its forms. And the crimes that our community have been facing, I mean, some of the footage is incredibly graphic, incredibly brutal. And what we heard quite clearly from some of the evidence of the inquiry, some of the very brave victims who spoke at the inquiry, was that the implications of this offending are long-lasting in terms of time lost at work, in terms of medical bills, in terms of just the trauma of having to re-engage with community after experiencing such shocking violence.
Absolutely.
So if we do want to address crime, then we need to address crime in all of its forms.
Absolutely. Sean Mulcahy from the Victorian Pride Lobby, thank you for talking to us today about the parliamentary hearings into LGBTIQA+ hate crimes here in Victoria. Thank you so much. And just quickly, when do we get a report back? When will the report be issued?
The report is due to be tabled in Parliament on the 1st of September of this year. Don't forget, we've got an election in November. We should receive a response from the government, whichever government that may be, 6 months after September, so early in the new year.
Thank you so much for your time today, Sean. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much, James.
Sean Mulcahy there from the Victorian Pride Lobby. 3CR.